How would you like to optimize your energy and mental and physical performance? In today's episode, Kyle Anthony Trotman will tell us about how to do this and how to become energy literate so that you can make the most of your body and mind and feel the best that you can possibly feel. And what's so special about Kyle is he's the founder of High Vibe Holonomics and the Holonomic Institute, and he helps purpose-driven professionals reclaim their energy, rewire limiting patterns, and build lives and businesses rooted in clarity and alignment. And after surviving 44 overdoses and fully recovering from a near-severed medial prefrontal cortex, he's dedicated his life to energy literacy, blending neuroscience, bioenergetics, and transformational education to create real and measurable change. Now, this is a fascinating topic because everybody wants to have great energy. Everyone wants to feel the best possible in the shortest possible span of time. So, Kyle, tell us about what should entrepreneurs do to get there, to have the best possible energy.
Fuel Podcast with Lily Patrashko shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
Yeah, I mean, first off, thank you for that intro, because that was a nice little curveball that I got there at the beginning. But the biggest thing that I share specifically with clientele, entrepreneurs, or people who are just getting introduced into this work is understanding energy from the biological observation hierarchy. So where does it start from subatomic and atomic aspects, and then getting into the cellular, the mitochondrial, the molecular structures, and then really honing that in with focus. And then anything that is really helpful for people to understand is really how to hone in everything with their focus, and then bringing that into our frameworks with help teaching flow, the neurobiological aspects of flow for post-traumatic growth as well. So it's like a big, best way I could say it, big educational piece when people do their side-by-side training, and when they work with me one-to-one. We just go through the energy diagnostics to see exactly where exactly you need to dial that in. So that's the best way that I like to break it down for people.
Thank you. So tell us, what can people do to reach life and business flow through what you just talked about?
That's a great question. Yeah, life and business flow, I think it's kind of like a harmonization point, is kind of starting with schedule worship. Like, if you think about it that way, if you know exactly where you are focused wise throughout the entirety of your calendar, then you can start to reverse engineer exactly what other inputs you need. So flow, in its essence, obviously, is the aspect of your conscious awareness going to attention, and then attention going to focus, focus being prolonged concentration. You need to be able to have those time blocks, because complete concentration requires 90 to 120 minutes. So you being able to start with your calendar, that's the perfect way to go about it, knowing exactly where to dial in your focus.
Thank you. So tell us about the neuroscience of getting more energy.
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing is in this notion, the attentive components, like this, I'm always going to revert back to attention, because wherever your attention goes, or wherever your focus goes, your energy flows. So really teaching how to prolong complete concentration. So the neuroscience is just giving us the backing of how often we get distracted. On average, we literally get distracted 36 times per hour. We check our email over 50 times per hour. We literally have, on average, the average knowledge worker only gets about 11 minutes of focus work per day. So we really hone in just the neuroscience, those specific statistics, and then just teaching more of those flow techniques through the flow cycle so people can really dial in their performance.
Wow, that is so fascinating. So what do people need to do to increase that level of focus?
Yeah, I mean, understand the flow cycle. So there's four phases in the flow cycle, and really understanding that, you can really understand where your conscious awareness is. And then once you really try to truly practice this through the techniques that we teach through our school and also through the one-to-one, that is going to prolong, obviously, like I said, the concentration points and really help you dial in your output. And we've found research through McKinsey over a 10-year meta-analysis that if you really accentuate flow, not only just for your production, your increase of output goes up 500%. So it's like really understanding how to go through the flow cycle and where you are within the flow cycle so you can really do that for yourself.
Thank you. What do people need to do from a physical perspective, perhaps, to optimize their energy to get to a level of flow? Because I remember, like, I'm like this bunny, like this Duracell bunny sometimes, where I'm in complete cool. flow. And when I'm in this complete flow, like, I feel so happy and so joyful. And it's like, things could go wrong. And I'm like, you know, whatever, everything's fine.
And it's dialed in. Yeah. Flowing.
And then it's like, I attract clients and I'm doing a lot of different things. And I'm like, everything is just working. And then other times, which is, I would say, most of the time, I'm in this like thing. It's almost like, yeah, I want to work and I have the energy to work and I'm like excited to work, but I get distracted a lot. Like, how do I come out of this distraction mode into actually producing and flow mode?
Yeah. No, the beautiful part about that is we're just in a distracted world, right? There's just stuff everywhere. So knowing the first phase within the flow cycle, which is known as the struggle phase, there's an optimal point within the first 3 to 5 minutes, and it can be up to about 23 minutes where you just have to push through and allowing your environment to not have any distractions. You just have one solo task. And then that way, when you are not distracted, you can actually go through the release phase. You can really drop in, and then that's where flow gets in. So it's really about optimizing your environment and then also physically just making sure that you're not having too many things happening at once, so you know how to actively recover after you go through flow, because flow is very taxing on the neurochemicals, but really optimizing your environment so you don't have more than one task at a time. So you're really almost essentially, like I said, going through the struggle phase to get through to that flow. So most of the time we are just distracted minds, kind of moving through so many inputs. So really optimizing your environment so you're just doing one task at a time. Like, that is the biggest challenge, but that's going to make you amplify and allow more flow to be in your life.
Okay, now let's take some practical examples. Let's say I want to write a book. Okay, what I find is that when I run to write a book, I might sit down and then I'm thinking, oh, I should really get some coffee because that'll be more productive.
Sure.
And then, oh, I should really put some ice on my face because that will make me feel more, you know, like more energized. Oh my God, I should really have this cookie. And then I should really like get the computer a little bit closer to the window. You know, like what I mean is like I'm this distraction machine. And then it might take me like all day to finally sit down. And then when like my entire team has stopped working and then I finally I'm at this deadline where I'm like, oh my God, I have to submit this by whatever time frame, then that's when I properly sit down. And it's like I'm this machine. And it's like getting to this point where I'm doing so much. I can't believe so much is coming out of me, like, in, you know, in terms of writing, and I'm finally getting it done. So what's a better process to put in place to make this happen faster so it doesn't take me all day?
That's a beautiful question. And I love kind of how we're like ping ponging to different fun, unique topics. But when you go through the first phase of flow, there has to be that initiation, right? You have to be obviously initiated into the task. So I always tell people to reverse engineer it so you can have more flow by doing an active recovery process by literally stripping yourself of dopamine. And we just do that simply by wall sitting, right? Or you can light a candle and just stare literally at this candle. And what that does is it draws back the reserves of your dopamine so you have more of that going into flow, because that is a highly dopamine is highly amplified in flow. So when you do an active recovery practice like wall staring, you really start to hone in how much neurochemicals are going to go into the flow cycle itself. So I always tell people to start before the first step, so that way you're actually amplifying yourself and understanding your flow triggers too. And those are all environmental in your aspects, but it's really more so about executing what is going to trigger flow prior to that initiation. And I always tell people to do an active recovery process before you do it.
Thank you. The other thing that I find quite funny is that I am more in flow when I am in love. And if I'm not in love, Okay.
I love it.
And let's say if I'm not in love, but I feel like a lot of self-love, I feel in this like bubble of love and joy. And I feel almost like I'm in this tunnel where it's almost like nothing else matters. Just the task at hand matters and I'm there. But I don't know how to actually get there. I'm just like sometimes there and sometimes I'm not. So like, how do I get transported into that flow state?
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about this is the challenge skills ratio balance. There's about like understanding how challenging one task is, and then how understanding what one task could be too boring, right? Because you can't skip the phases. So you having that solid intent within the flow trigger itself is allowing yourself to be like, all right, well, I know exactly what this feels like. Right. I know exactly what that tunnel is. Right. So now all I have to do is just preempt what are the steps before I get to that tunnel. Right. Because it's very easy for us as human beings to be like, hey, I just want to feel that. Right. But to work for it and work towards it is just to understand, okay, I have a small window of time to go through this struggle phase before I drop into that release. And what you're talking about in that love notion, the release, there's an exorbitant amount of nitric oxide that floods the body and it just kind of opens you up. And then you become even more focused. And obviously, if you're passionate about what you do, or if you're in love with what you do, that's just going to be that key. So it's just understanding the metrics so you can reverse engineer, knowing what the average is of time. So it takes just to get back into that tunnel. And this is where this stuff, I get geeked out, because if you give people numbers, they can measure where they're at and they can reverse engineer and then really just amplify more of that flow in their life.
Thank you. Tell us about how you discovered the neuroscience of flow and energy and mental and physical performance. How did you discover this for yourself, and how did you put it in place, and what results did you have with it? Like, are you now this super bunny machine that kind of produces anytime that you want, anything that you want, or...
I mean, it's that initiation. I'm very blessed with an engine to be very similar like the Energizer Bunny. But to kind of backtrack at the beginning of your question, because this is where it really hallmarked, was the godfather of flow, Mihai Macsikszentmihalyi. He wrote the book about flow and the optimal experience and optimal performance. And then I got to find where this would meet in a practical sense. And a paper was written in 2022 called The First Few Seconds of Flow. And it was this endogenous antidote white paper about what a practical techniques could look like to help people with post-traumatic stress disorder, other mental maladies, anxiety, and certain things like that. So when I found those two keys, then I was like, okay, how would I put myself into a position to help people, right? One-to-one or with training. And those two key references really helped me. And now I just know the steps. I was like, I know when I'm about to go into a task. I know exactly how long on average it takes me. I know exactly what that release feels like. And I know exactly what flow is just because of the output. But I just feel with that type of information, it helped me understand consciousness and also attentiveness. Also, just the issues that we have with ADD and ADHD and attention deficit trait that we have in this society. So I do have an exorbitant amount of energy, but I also know how to recover so I can continuously be in flow too. So, yeah.
Thank you. So tell us about what results you've had personally in leveraging flow. Are you now this super bunny that can write like hundreds of pages or make hundreds of phone calls or coach lots of people without getting tired? Or like what are some specific examples of what you've managed to do with this newfound energy and flow?
Yeah, the beautiful part about that question is the practicum. So my technique that I developed over 11 and a half years, known as subconscious dynamics, is a flow sequence, right? So when you work on this with somebody, you're actually doing flow with them. And group flow, which only takes two people, actually amplifies more energy. It's actually one of the most known intoxicating things on this planet that we know from a neurochemical standpoint. And that's the other reason why that you, when you're in love with something or you're in love with another person, it just gets easier to drop in. So that has allowed me to just work with so many. I've done over, just as of last week, 10,012 one-to-ones in my entire career. So it's just the output of being able to work with people has allowed me to really get that volume. So it's helped an immense amount of people. So that's also awesome. But then also the research too. When you're in flow and you're just doing research, it just feels like you like your own AI assistant. It's really fun. So yeah.
Tell us about the results that some of your coaches have managed to achieve through optimizing their energy and then mental and physical performance through flow.
Yeah, I'd love this because just as of last night, we finished our first facilitators training, which we're teaching students now to do this. We just wrapped up that for the first time. But I would say the biggest results that I've gotten is getting people off of medications, right? Understanding exactly what they need from all input standpoints, understanding the mitochondrial cycling, understanding what their attentiveness is behind what they're also consuming as well, because your attention is obviously consuming everything. So I think those are my biggest examples, is helping people get off of medications, like understanding that they can do this endogenously. They do not need medications to be able to heal from something, right? Because if you put enough energy and, or excuse me, attention and intention into a specific place within yourself, your body will naturally endogenously promote those chemicals for healing. And I think my greatest story was helping my dad get off all medications in 22 days. Like, that was my favorite one because it's my pops. So I loved it.
Thank you. Give us some examples of what medications have some of your coachees been able to release and not need to use anymore.
Yeah, so this classifications of steroids, glucocorticoid steroids, just because you're understanding like these stress components, you're getting a lot of noradrenaline. You're also getting a ridiculous amount of cortisol right there at the struggle phase, because it does take you to lock in to be able to get through that. So it is somewhat stressful. So those are the ones that I've seen a lot of people get off of, and also just those certain kind of pain medications too. Yeah.
Thank you. So these kind of medications, what are they for? Pain and releasing stress, or are they for something else as well?
Usually for like itises. So like pancreatitis, like there's my dad had ulcerative colitis. So anything after an itis is just a pain and inflammation disorder. So that's usually what, you know, prednisone steroids are for.
Thank you. So through this flow technique, basically these people that you worked with have been able to kind of concentrate so that their own body starts to heal itself. Is that how you would describe it?
That's one piece of the puzzle, right? So we obviously have the food, we have the other components too. The reason why the name High Vibe Holonomics, because it represents the whole, and just it's Greek for the whole law. So there's other components to it, but going through the flow cycle allows them to go back into the memory bank of their gray matter to clear out specific identity markers or memories that are impeding their healing, right? Because we have a ridiculous amount of research through the science of psychoneuroimmunology that how your thoughts produce the neurological function, the health of you. So those past thoughts, those past memories that are still embedded in your neural circuitry, that's where that flow sequence gets in. But we obviously take care of the nutrition side of things, the sleep optimizations as well, really understanding your other universal cycles for healing and optimization.
Thank you. Tell us what happens on a mitochondrial level.
And, oh, yeah.
when here we go. When you implement the flow technique that you are teaching your coaches.
Yeah, well, here's a fun way to look at this. So the Krebs cycle has to have a molecular structure. And the Krebs cycle, once it starts getting going, the ATP that is produced specifically from this cycle starts to just allow the mitochondria to open up and express itself, essentially. And what I've found, obviously, in our research, but also working with people, is a desire is one of the key indicators for the Krebs cycle. So with the actual flow sequence, it's allowing people to desire a better outcome for themselves. And just by that alone, we found in our research that produces an exorbitant amount of mitochondria. Like it just allows it to amplify. And then we just kind of add in those little pieces, specific supplementations. Also, this is where we get really geeked out into the cellular membrane potential. This is where all the things come into the other components of what we do in this work, but really just having a desire to want to be the best version of yourself, whether you are sick, whether you are recovering, because I've worked with former addicts, really just being able to teach them the desire points of what that's actually doing from a mitochondrial potential.
Thank you. Tell us more about the impact of thoughts on mitochondria and on the energy, vitality, mental, and physical performance. What would someone need to put in place to change their thoughts into empowering thoughts that lead to an optimization of the cellular function, energy, mental, physical performance?
Yeah. I mean, this is a fun question. So our brains on a cognitive level have the capacity to only process 7 units of information at any given time, right? So being able to hone in one singular thought instead of multitasking with multiple things, it is allowing you to expedite and also expand upon the mitochondria that you do have the energy potential. Behind that, our flow sequence deals with all the subcortical things, all the things in the background that are trying to get your attention because they have not been released yet. So when we teach the flow cycle, the subconscious dynamics to go through the flow cycle, it allows the brain more clarity so you can hone in on the exact thoughts that you need to have going into your task, right? So the best part that I love about this practice is seeing the light bulbs go on. Right. And then having a re-imprinting process. And re-imprinting process is very similar to like an affirmation. Like, what would you say? And we have a worksheet called the perceptual frame. And we found obviously in our research that it takes 400 repetitions for you to fully ingrain an affirmation. But if you're doing it in a playful state, how we teach it, it reduces that down to 10 to 20 reps. So it's really about clearing up the clutter in the background with the technique and then giving them focused techniques to build out those specific thoughts that you're alluding to.
Thank you. How does someone delete what has been ingrained in them since they were really young? In terms of, let's say, someone thinking, okay, I'm not good enough, or I'm not this, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm not pretty enough, whatever. And how do you delete that? And how do you reframe and rewire that belief into, I am loved by millions of people for the artistry, creativity, and joy that I share with people, or something else?
Yeah, that's fun. So there is a process in neuroscience that was developed in the early 2000s called the window of reconsolidation. And the window of reconsolidation says that up to a couple hours or to about 6 to 8 hours, when you target a specific memory, it's malleable, which means you can change it. You can't really change the memory itself, but you can change the associated meaning, the emotional charge to it. So when we go through subconscious dynamics, the flow sequence, we teach them all the way to that initial imprint, that first earliest memory that is associated to that specific program or that belief that we're working on. And we just literally give it a new meaning through that cognitive reframe. So, and then once that's cleared, you actually get to re-imprint yourself with your preferred imprint, right? And then we start getting into the focus technique. So that's the way of quote unquote deleting it, because you can't technically delete it. You can just assign a new emotional meaning. And that's what the window of reconsolidation does. And that's just part of that flow practice.
Okay, give us an example of how you would do this with a practical disempowering belief that you turn into an empowering one in a playful way, in the way that you mentioned.
Sure. Yeah, well, that is the subconscious dynamics in a nutshell. It's literally 90 minutes. So next time I see you and we ever want to get on a call, I can just take you through a sequence and I can literally show you the process. But we take them through 18 separate techniques to get to that first imprint. And once they are in that space, it's called psychological association to safety. So their nervous system doesn't feel recharged by that quote unquote traumatic memory. And then we literally take them through a reframing step to allow them to drop into flow and literally just interface with their younger version of themselves, right? It's super, super fun. And then we just solidify that with our conscious integration techniques that takes that perceptual frame and allows you to literally mold that and just start to build that network, that new network of what that preferred belief is. And hopefully that helps, because it's like, yeah, the technique itself is about 90 minutes. It takes a decent amount of time to get to that memory.
Thank you. Do you find from your research that most people who are like really successful athletes that have won Olympic medals and so on, are they going through something similar to what you're describing? Or is it that they've been programmed from really young ages to be really successful, like Tiger Woods? What is your opinion or your research around this?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because the subconscious dynamics does the subcortical work, so you're going backwards, right? So I feel like the athletes not only just get perpetuate flow, right? Especially professional athletes, they're doing that more so on a conscious side, right? So I feel not only just what I found in my research is that the mental athletics that it takes to really perform and to really produce, I do believe that is ingrained in most people at a very early age. And there's also intrinsic motivators that dial this in for a lot of people. And a lot of high performers, a lot of athletes are just curious, right? And they also love mastery. I mean, look at Michael Jordan, look at Kobe Bryant, like wanted to be masters of their craft. I'm just getting chills talking about this, because when you can accentuate flow, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, you're still taking that next level step to be at your highest game. So I feel like that is very ingrained for very early athletes, just because your formative years are from 0 to 7. So I feel like if that is really a part of your training when you're younger, you are very prone. We call flow prone for, you know, your best game or your performance.
Thank you. Have any of the coaches that you've worked with, have they removed some of the pain or reduced some of the pain that they had with the techniques for flow that you describe?
I love how you call them coaches. I don't know if I've ever heard that before. It's so good. But yeah, we do a pain inflammatory stress scale right before we jump into the flow, because we want to make sure that one, they're understanding through the process of rumination that the thoughts from the background of their mind are causing that pain, and it's lodged somewhere in the body. And then obviously, as we go through the flow technique, we always just make sure that we do reassessments to make sure that it is completely cleared from the system.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share about this process of optimizing your energy and mental and physical performance? And if someone wanted to implement this, like what kind of, is there any sort of like blueprint of how they would actually do it, what they would have to consult with you in order to make this happen?
I mean, when you asked that question, I just got a big grin on my face, because I could talk about this all day. Like, this stuff is like the most fascinating stuff to me. We do have a facilitator's training. It's called our Energy Literacy Program. So it teaches you all the steps of really kind of what to go through. And then we do have the blueprints, the templates of how you actually go through the sequences. There is a lot of the one-to-ones that I've done with students in the back office, so you can actually train and see how other people do it. But yeah, the best way to go about it just is go to the horse's mouth. And I can literally kind of guide you through that. I'm working with a couple other podcast hosts to actually do one of these live, so you can actually kind of see it happen in real time, because it is very complex, because there is a lot of steps to it. But once you kind of get the hang of it, it's pretty fun. So yeah, those would be the options to be a part of that.
Thank you. I find that you can literally waste your entire life, or at least waste millions in potential earnings when you don't have
Sure.
the ability to focus on what you really want to do. And have you made like any observation in terms of like your students and clients on how much they've lost from not being able to leverage their energy and be in their best mental and physical
Yeah, I mean, that alone is a perfect segue into the most staggering stat that I've ever found, is that on average, businesses are losing up to $650 billion. That's B, not an M, that's billion per year in productivity costs because of lack of focus, because we're so distracted. Like, the average worker only gets 11 focused minutes per day of work. Like, to me, that is wild, right? So it's like, I see it in everybody that we work with, right? It's just how much, if the average attention span in America for adults is roughly between 6 to 8, and we found that research in 2015, I can only imagine what it's like with TikTok and all these other things that have come around in the last like 11 years. So I see it with everybody, but it's one of the most, and this, I say this with a great deal of emphasis, it is one of the most uncomfortable things to sit in a struggle phase, because that's why it's called a struggle phase. So it's easier for us to be distracted, right? And we're more prone to that just because there's just all these shiny things out there. So I've seen people just get them a sense of autonomy back within themselves, which is an intrinsic motivator by going through this work. And when you have autonomy within yourself, like, you now are actually, quote unquote, in your locus of control. You can control your controllables, right? Because obviously you can't control everything that's happening in the world. But if you can control your focus, you have a massive leverage point on pretty much everybody else. So I see it every single day, but it's also just because the flow cycle is a universal thing that we go through every time we initiate our attention. It's just something you have to keep working at, just like anything else.
Thank you. Now, imagine you're a manager and you wanna hire 50 new people, and you have no choice but to hire 50 TikTokers. Okay. And
oh, no.
I'm talking people who are, you know, like, this generation is basically a TikTok generation that are just flicking mm-hmm. and scrolling and this kind of thing. And their attention span is like 1 second. What can you put in place to get all of these people, 50 TikTokers, to kind of work productively for you? Like, what would be like the one thing you would get them to do first?
Well, I'd get them in the Holonomic Institute, because we literally have about like anywhere from 10 to 13 calls per month with 3 to 4 other different facilitators outside myself, and we go through focus training. So it's like, it is a mandatory thing. So a lot of people that come into our facilitation, I just make sure I'm like, hey, utilize the actual setups for going to these calls, because it actually promotes your focus. It actually increases your desire to want to produce and also to meet your goals just by being with other people, right? So I would definitely just, if I was gonna hire that many TikTokers, I would just be like, hey, you got to get into this focus training or you are not getting hired. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Thank you. What about if, imagine that you are a TikToker, you're a person who kind of flicks all day and so on, and you want to become more productive. What would be one thing you would do first?
That is one thing I would do first. I mean, I would definitely master the Power Five, which are techniques for your focus. You have like creative imagery, mental rehearsal, meditation and mindfulness, and you also have yoga nidra, as well as the active recovery steps, right? So what I was kind of alluding to earlier and kind of mentioning, that notion of wall sitting, when you can promote boredom in your brain, like, you desensitize all of the dopamine that's coming from all of these sensory things. So that's the first thing that I would do, is mastering sitting with myself, right? And just getting so good at being uncomfortable so I can just lower the threshold of dopamine that's coming through my brain. And just, yeah, that's where I would start. It's what I would share with anybody. I was like, if you can get really good at sitting with yourself, staring at a wall, having no inputs, you're going to maximize your chances for prolonged and complete concentration, which there's mechanisms to that too. So that's what I would first do, is just active recovery and just really go through those techniques to just be okay with being bored.
Thank you. The thing that I found most useful in terms of getting me to flow is actually, for example, putting ice on my face.
Cool. That's an active recovery. Yeah.
It kind of cools me down and it kind of gets me into this like super bunny mode. Cool. And the other thing that I find works is like listening to like piano music or like Mozart. And Mozart is not something like I like to listen to. Mm. I like to listen to like pop or jazz or like something very, very upbeat, you know, because I like to dance. But when I know that I have to focus, then I will play like Mozart or Beethoven or Chopin or something like classical music.
Beautiful.
And I find that it's a bit like playing chess. I don't like to play chess, but when I finally play chess, then it's like you're focused, you know, like that's a really great way to like focus.
There's great research about jazz musicians and their brainwave state when they're playing, because they are in flow. There's a lot of great research about that too. So it's like, I can only imagine, especially going through classical music, because it's so rhythmic, right? Flow is a rhythmic thing. Like, if it gets staggered or it gets disrupted, then it's not rhythmic. So when you have something so beautiful kind of going through, your brain kind of harmonizes itself to be essentially focused, right? So that's awesome.
The other thing that I find works quite a lot for me is to have like a nice warm bath or a shower, because it kind of cools me down, because I am a TikToker and I love flaking through.
Sure.
But if I have like a hot bath, then it kind of cools me down and all of a sudden I'm calm and I'm up for anything.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. And I love it too, because you were talking about just the active recovery. Like a lot of these simple things you can do, like put ice on your face, is allowing you to propitiate more of the neurochemicals to get into flow. Like doing those active recoveries are so massive. And it's just also really allocating what, even going back to the calendar worship, what active recovery type are you doing for which part of the day? Because you have to align that with your circadian rhythm. So you want to do something more parasympathetic at night, something a little bit more sympathetic during the day, so you have more energy, right? So it's really fun when I get to chop it up with some of these, you know, these amazing hosts on these shows and on these podcasts, because it's just like, we're all doing it, right? We're all in flow, especially when we're conversating. It's one of the biggest flow triggers there are. So it's like knowing how to engage your active recovery so you have a deeper sense of initiation, kind of like a rite of passage into the struggle phase. Yeah, it's just fun. It's fun seeing different people and how they do their thing.
The other thing that I find brings me to flow is organizing. So like, I'm a big, I love, or, you know, putting stuff in boxes. I love boxes in general. And, you know, like I love small boxes, big boxes, medium boxes, and boxes that can be put into boxes, you know, that kind of thing. And, and the thing is that because it's like a mindless kind of exercise, the kind of thing that you can do without thinking too much, I find that it actually leads me to some of the most productive, most exciting ideas, and it brings me to flow, and I'm not intending for it to bring me to flow, but it does, you know?
Right.
I find that even during the exercise of like cleaning or organizing, or right after, it kind of leads to that. Or let's say if I'm washing dishes or ironing, again, it's like mindless exercises that lead me to flow as well. Do you find that useful as well?
I totally do. I mean, this alluded to kind of in the intro, when I had my brain injury, like my attention span was just so fragmented, because just that specific type of injury makes it really challenging to focus. So when you go into these task orientations, especially something that you love to do, like you are reconnecting those fibers between the medial prefrontal cortex and your amygdala. So you are really engaged, not only just with your mental task, but also really involved emotionally too. So I learned that flow helped me recover from that just by putting myself into those initiations, right? Those specific tasks that I love so much, you know, and just the fact that you're like, I love these boxes, right? I know myself well enough to see how I can engage in that. And people are not realizing this on a deeper level. You know, a lot of better professionals or higher end professionals than myself know this, right? You are doing something endogenously to you neurochemically when you're in flow. You have these anandamide, these bliss chemicals, and everything else that's coming through that is literally healing you from the inside out, just because you have complete concentration and prolonged focus. Like, it's really fun to see the healing potential behind just teaching this stuff.
Thank you. The other thing that I find brings me to flow as well is some exercise. Now, I don't like going to the gym, but very occasionally I do. Okay. And I prefer to do exercise by swimming or playing tennis or walking really fast or hiking. But very occasionally when I do go to the gym, I find that somehow I'm a lot more creative and a lot better ideas come to mind. And it's like, I get so many more ideas that I have to have like a phone nearby so I can write down what I'm thinking. Otherwise, sure, I lose my train of thought. So I'm wondering about, do you find that when people exercise with weights versus like doing something light, do you find that it also brings them to flow faster or not?
I think just based off the observation, because I have no verified science on this, I feel like just because something like swimming or something like biking is a little bit more rhythmic than actual weights, because you're adding more friction to the weights. But I can't verify that. But I would say just something light and more, you know, using your body rather than isometrics probably can get you into flow better. But I'm like, I guarantee it, you could probably get into flow doing, you know, some bench presses too. But I think just with more natural rhythms with things, just even kind of alluding to the music example, I think just doing those things that are taking the whole body, you know, is more flow prone.
Thank you. The other thing that I find that leads me to is also if I do like hiking in the woods or like walking in the park, that can be more effective than like walking on the main road, especially if it's like very busy. Did you find that as well?
Yes. Kind of like, yes. Yeah, so nature is a flow trigger. So there is 22 known flow triggers, and one of them predominantly is nature. So just being in nature, just essentially forest bathing, right? Or wherever that type of nature is, whether it's the mountains, whether it's on the beach, right? A beach one, just because horizons really are helpful for flow as well. So it's like a lot of people think that flow just has to be this like performance thing. And it's like, no, it's an endogenous solution to the other mechanics within your being. So yeah, we found definitely in our research that just being in nature, just being present with nature makes you flow prone.
Tell us more about the flow triggers that you mentioned just now.
So there's 22 known ones. I don't know them like perfectly off the top of my head, but it's really about setting yourself up to go through the process of the flow cycle, right? So there are certain things that will promote your being to go into that flow cycle, right? So just even alluding to what I said with nature, you have certain things like autonomy. You have certain things like curiosity. If you're just curious about something, you are more flow prone. So then it just now comes down to your training. Like, how long have you been able to go through a struggle phase? I know when students come in and work with me, it takes them a little bit longer. We have like a thing called the four setups that helps them get through. So you have things like breath work, right? You have mental imagery, which is also a flow trigger. Like, you have these things that help you crack through that initial struggle phase, just so you can start to get that feeling, that nitric oxide from that second phase of release, that surrender, before you get into flow. And it's very, very like the mechanics behind it are so fascinating. So those flow triggers just allow you to become more prone to that experience, right? So it's fun.
Tell us about flow groups, because I find that sometimes I go to certain events where I meet really creative people, and sometimes they don't even have to say anything. I'm just feeling like I'm plugged to electricity and I'm about to charge up an entire city. Okay. And when they start speaking, like they say something and I'm like bouncing off ideas, they're bouncing off my ideas and so on. And it's like this creativity down, you know? And tell us about how someone can leverage flow groups to expand their own thinking and to expand their own health.
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually do a call once a month called Community Coherence. So when you have a group of people come in and then they are focusing their attention and intention on something, the coherence field builds. And when you are kind of wrapped in that field, you are literally becoming conductive, right? So that's when people like what you just said, you could literally just go into an environment and you feel like your batteries just got charged, right? So in group flow is known as one of the most intoxicating feelings that we get literally from our neurochemical standpoint because we feel connected, right? We're really feeling that we are one in kind of purpose with the other people around us. And that is a massive, massive universal human need for us, is to feel purposeful, to feel connected. And that's where group flow, from my experience, not only just being a teacher, being a facilitator, is once you're dialed in with people, like that is one of the greatest healing things that you can go through. And Lynn McTaggart wrote the book, The Power of Eight, which really talks about that. It's really fascinating how she documented about 8 to 12 people in small groups can just focus their intention and be in a community, essentially, a small community, and that amplifies essentially the energy of everybody. It's really fascinating.
So I met Lynn McTaggart in a
Oh,
church in
cool.
London.
In church. That's awesome.
Yeah, and she did an experiment on us where she asked us to find a person that is the least healthy out of the entire group, and we had to like hold hands and send positive energy to that person. And I really did feel like an energy shift where the energy was flowing through me, at least. I didn't feel like the other people's energy, but I felt like a circle of energy was passing through. And I'm not sure how the person who was not so well, how they felt, but I certainly felt the energy flowing. And I wanted to ask you, like, why is it that in certain events that I go to, why is it that I feel powered up and charged up, and in others, I don't feel as charged up?
Yeah, that, well, this is, and she wrote the other book, The Intention Experiment, right? So it's really the intention of what people are there for. I've been to sales conferences where I feel the intention that somebody's actually trying to buy me something. But I've also been to other sales conferences where people are just trying to provide value, right? And just be a little bit more entertaining with their education. It's really, I believe, just the intention, right? And then also what that those individuals have not worked on. Right. There's a lot of the quote unquote shadow components to other people, which are really, really challenging. And if those people are coming in with those type of intents, I think that lowers the threshold of just how anybody feels really in general. And I mean, anybody who ever has been around a sap or anybody that's been in that mood, it's not necessarily that it's most repulsive, but it's not something that you gravitate towards essentially, right? So I think that just the intention behind just the group and kind of the motive, right, that's happening specifically in each environment plays a massive role to that.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you so they can enhance their energy and mental and physical performance and healing.
Yeah, I'm boots on the ground. I love being in the trenches. So hit me up on Facebook Messenger, Kyle Anthony Troutman. Literally, I just like to connect with people and get them to certain places, especially with their questions. But our hub is highvibeholonomics.com. We also have a business Instagram at highvibeholonomics. But most of my communication is just done on my personal page, just Kyle Anthony Troutman on Facebook. So keep it simple.
Thank you. Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.